Hey, everybody. Well, this Friday is Earth Day, and we couldn't think of a better episode to rerun than our conversation with Vikas Narula, the founder of Neighborhood Forest. We talked to Vikas earlier this year, and it was such an amazing and inspiring conversation that we just had to replay the episode this week to celebrate what he and his team are bringing to the world. Neighborhood Forest is a nonprofit that provides children the priceless joy of planting and watching trees grow. Over the last few months, Vikas and his group of tree-loving volunteers have worked tirelessly to get ready to provide trees to a record 40,000 kids in 48 states, including Canada. Yep, 40,000. The goal of Neighborhood Forest is to beautify our neighborhoods, to put a significant dent in our carbon footprint, and to help instill in the hearts of our little ones a sense of magic, wonder, and love for our planet. So let's listen in again as we celebrate our amazing planet this week with Vikas Narula.
We hear funny stories like this year, one child loved his tree, planted it, and then he came back the next day and he's like, how come it's not big? So coming back to that whole thing, it's like it's teaching. The tree teaches us.
Yeah.
Good things don't happen overnight. They take time. They take decades. Mm-hmm. They take patience. I've had to learn that with Neighborhood Forest, like just the venture of Neighborhood Forest.
Yeah.
Many times I'm like, how come this thing isn't growing? How come people don't want our free trees? What the heck, you know?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gratitude Spark Podcast, a show about the stories behind real people in the real world and how they are using the practice of gratitude to spark incredible change. My name is Mike Good, and on today's episode, we're chatting about trees. Yep, trees. And one man's journey to give every child the priceless joy of planting and watching trees grow. We'll learn about how a simple tree can help instill in us a sense of magic, wonder, gratitude, and love for our planet. Vikas Narula has always had a love for trees, and in 2010, after a deathbed experience, founded an organization called Neighborhood Forest. Since then, Neighborhood Forest has reached over 400 schools, libraries, and youth groups. That's over 100,000 families. And they've planted over 50,000 trees through the hands of children and parents across North America. In 2021, through a series of amazing events and pretty incredible people, Neighborhood Forest went viral, and they gave almost 20,000 kids in 35 states their very own tree to plant on Earth Day. This conversation hit home for me as I remember when I was a kid in third or fourth grade. I got a pine tree seedling on Earth Day. I walked home with excitement for the opportunity to plant and take care of this tree. And even after transplanting it to a new home when we moved, my tree thrived and is standing about 40 feet tall today. And it still brings a sense of joy and wonder every time I see it when I come back to my childhood home. So join us to hear more about Vikas's personal journey, which isn't unlike the journey of a tree from seedling to something that creates a beautiful and incredible impact on our environment. It's a journey filled with hope, challenges, a deathbed experience, and incredible gratitude. So with that, let's meet Vikas.
I'm a child of Indian immigrants. My parents immigrated to Canada in the late 60s, and that's where I was born, in a small city called Chatham in Ontario, Canada. Yeah, okay. It's kind of between Windsor and London, not far from Detroit.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with Windsor. I lived just outside of Detroit for a while, so.
Yeah, so not far.
Who knows, maybe I was in Chatham at one point.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's about an hour from Detroit. So I grew up there. My parents were seekers, and they're really into Eastern spirituality. They got more into it once they came to Canada, I think, and they discovered Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, and Transcendental Meditation, and they were just really devout followers.
Okay.
And when I was 11, they decided to pick up and move us to Fairfield, Iowa, which was the home of Maharishi International University and Maharishi School.
Right.
So I grew up there from 11, age 11 to 24. And it was a very, you know, unconventional place. You know, Oprah calls it the most unusual town in America. She's visited and did a thing on it in her show. And
interesting. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, you can check it out. But it was a very unique experience, but a very nurturing and nourishing experience. So that's a little bit about my background and upbringing.
Fairfield is not too far from where I'm sitting. We're just outside Minneapolis here, and I know that's where you're at too. But yeah, I've been down to Fairfield. In fact, it reminds me of a little visit that you and I took together down to Fairfield for company we worked with. It was a fun experience to get the tour, of where you grew up.
Yeah, that was super fun. And we made a little documentary in the process.
We did. That's right. Good times.
Yeah, it was good times. Super fun, Mike.
I'm curious, so this podcast is all about gratitude. And, when I think about my gratitude journey, I was really grateful for all of the things that I had when I was growing up and the experiences that my parents were able to provide for me. I'm curious, do you have anything that stands out or things that you did, experiences that you had that you look back now with a sense of gratitude?
Definitely, definitely. Well, I grew up going to India for summer vacations, because all my family was there, my parents, mm-hmm. parents and relatives. Mm-hmm. And going to India was always a real eye opener. Okay. And, there's always this shock factor. And I mean, I remember going there when I was 3 years old and when I was seven, and I stayed there for half a year when I was 14. I went again when I was 17. I met my wife there. We've been back several times. So when I think about gratitude, I think about my trips to India because life is so radically different there than here in America. And there's so much extreme poverty. And it made me always think about why wasn't I born into those circumstances? Why was I born into a middle-class family in America where there's a lot more prosperity and life isn't as big of a struggle because things are just easier and the access to resources is so much more prevalent. So I always would come back from India with an immense sense of gratitude for, where I was born into, because I didn't have to worry about just the basic needs that so many people have to worry about, like where they're going to get their food and whether the rain is going to come in through their roof or whether they even have a roof,
Yeah.
So that I think was, that always made me very less materialistic and just grateful for whatever I have. Like if I've got food and a roof and a little, money to spend on a few things, I'm good. I'm not going to be complaining about anything because there's about, a half a billion people that, and more, if you think about other places around the world that don't have the basic needs. So I think that's probably, going to India was a huge gratitude spark for me.
Yeah, I think sometimes it really does take experiences like that to see life from a different lens in order to really appreciate what we have. I think, life goes so fast and we get so caught up in, just moving through our days and, our heads in our phones, our heads in our email, and we don't stop to appreciate all of the things that we have that others may not have. Mm-hmm. And I think those opportunities for you, it sounds like they were really kind of part of, building the framework of who you are now.
For sure. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Mm-hmm. So you were in Fairfield. Were you part of the Maharishi, education system?
Yeah. I attended Maharishi school from 6th to 12th grade. And then I went to Maharishi International University.
Okay.
Studied computer science. That's where I met Vincent. Okay. Actually, I met Vincent in high school when he was just developing the technology for vital images. Mm-hmm. And that's what actually influenced me to pursue computer science. And then I applied at his company when I was a senior in college to be an intern.
Yeah.
And I hired as an intern. And that's the reason we met. It was because of Vincent and Vital Images.
It's crazy. I I put together a blog post once, and it was, I don't know if you remember, but when I was a kid, there were these, this magazine called Highlights. You know, it was just like a fun little magazine for kids. And one of the pages in the magazine was one of those connect the dots things, you know, where it was just this like blank kind of a random scattering of dots. And the kid's job was to go from one to two to three to four. And then in the end, you come up with this really cool picture. But in the process, you really have no idea what those dots are going to, you know, what right. the end result is going to be.
Yeah.
And I think life is a lot like that. You know, we have all of these dots that connect us to our life path. Totally. And then we can like take a step back and we can really understand, like in the moment, the dot may not mean anything. You know, who knew yeah. that dot with Vincent would have led to, you know, you and I connecting that would have led to all these other things that would lead to this moment. Exactly. So, yeah, I think those connecting of the dots is that little kid's exercise is relates for me, at least, to kind of the path of life.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're hanging out because my parents moved to Fairfield and I happened to go on a field trip to Vincent's lab and happened to get, you know, hired by him, and which brought me to Minneapolis, and you ended up joining there years later. And here we are. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. As I've dug into my own journey with gratitude, I've thought a lot about that. You know, all of these seemingly meaningless experiences or introductions that we have with people that really do make a difference. You know, they really do become part of your life journey. So,
yeah, for sure.
So in one of your conversations, I think it was on another podcast, you talked about a project that you were involved in when you were at Maharishi University. And yeah. I think it was started from a gentleman that lived, I don't know if he lived in Fairfield, an Italian gentleman. That experience when you were at Maharishi University kind of led you over the course of the, you know, the next several years to where you are right now. We'll get into talking a little bit about what you're doing now, but I'm wondering if you could just walk us through, you know, what happened back when you were in high school and I mean in college, and how that really kind of sparked some of the passions that you have now.
Yeah. It's so interesting, Mike, because right around the time I met Vincent, I was a senior in high school and our science teacher took us over to his lab to see the technology he was developing. Right around that time, I remember kids at my school. So Maharishi School is a K-12 school. It's a small school. So we're on the same couple buildings next to each other. So I remember around Earth Day when I was in 11th or 12th grade, a bunch of kids taking home these tree seedlings for Earth Day. And I've always loved trees. You know, I loved climbing them when I was little. I just like trees. And so this was really the first time I was seeing baby trees in the hands of kids. And I was like, oh, that is so cute. Little trees. Like, what a concept. But I didn't really know like what this was about. I just knew, okay, it's Earth Day and these kids are taking trees. But I just remember that leaving an impression on me. Well, then, you know, I got into university, got into computer science. But going into my third year, I joined an environmental club. I helped start an environmental club. I just got really into environmentalism. And we were looking, as an environmental group, we were looking for projects to do, you know, ways to make a difference.
Sure.
And there was an Italian man, Francesco Valponi, who was a leader in the community, and he heard about this club. And he's like, hey, I want you to take over this really cool project, this free tree project that I learned about from David Kidd, who's from Ohio, who also practices transcendental meditation. Mm. So it turns out that David Kidd had started a free tree project in Ohio in the 80s, and he raised money and gave away millions of trees in Ohio. And I'm still connected to him. We're Facebook friends. Amazing guy. So he brought his free tree project to Fairfield, and Francesco loves trees. And so he had done this free tree project for a couple of years, got busy with things, and wanted someone to take it over, or some people. And so he saw our group and he's like, do you guys want to take over this free tree project? And I love trees. And I remember that moment in 11th or 12th grade when I saw the kids taking the trees home. I'm like, yeah, we want to do this project. So we took it over. and we revived it and grew it over the next few years while I was a college student. And it was an extremely rewarding project. I mean, we got the students involved in doing like a fashion show, which ended up raising thousands of dollars, which we would use to purchase the trees. We ended up giving tens of thousands of trees to kids in Southeast Iowa, and it was slowly spreading. And this is pre-internet. So everything was done through paper and order forms and things like that.
Wow.
We didn't have ways to capture. I mean, we took photos, but we couldn't get the parents to like share their photos on social media, you know? Sure. So we had a lot of undocumented tree plantings, if you will. But yeah, that was the beginning of my love. And so because of that program, I ended up planting a lot of trees on campus and in town. And I got to see those trees grow up over the years. I also got to see a lot of those trees die, like get weed whacked or mowed over or dug up because of construction or eaten by a deer or rabbit. And I was just like, God, it's not easy to grow trees. So I had a newfound appreciation for big mature trees and like how long it takes, how they're fighting against all these odds and just their magnificence. And they just get more beautiful with time, unlike humans, right? One could argue that we get, you know, old and frail and whatever.
Cranky. Yeah.
And cranky. Right. And, but the trees, they just get more majestic and beautiful. So that was a turning point. That was a very big dot that was going to connect much later on in my life, as we'll talk about.
Sure.
But yeah, that's sort of the origin story of it all.
Yeah, I think you hit on a couple things that struck me in terms of like how we live in our society right now. It's, you know, we just mentioned that things happen so fast, and it's all about kind of that immediate gratification. Mm-hmm. And you don't really get that with trees. I mean, it's not a fast process. So as you kind of started to touch on it a little bit, but how have you found gratitude, even just in the process of, you know, how a tree goes from a seedling to something that, you know, much more of a mature tree?
Well, it's awe-inspiring. I mean, I think there's a lot of things I learned from watching trees grow that are related to gratitude. I think that, you know, the tree is so selfless. It just like gives of itself.
Hmm.
It's giving oxygen, it's giving fruit, it's giving shade, it's giving shelter for animals, it's giving enjoyment for kids and climbing. And it gives without really expecting anything.
Hmm.
It's defenseless, right? Anyone could cut it down at any moment. It doesn't resist. It just lives its life giving. I mean, there's even this book, right? The Giving Tree.
The Giving Tree, yep.
Trees are so giving of themselves. Hmm. And you know, and humanity is so much in this mode of take.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You know, trees remind me to be more giving and in a defenseless kind of way. And I don't know, that somehow that's related to gratitude, right? It's living a life of reverence and selflessness versus what's in it for me.
Right.
And how am I going to benefit?
And I think just the perspective that, that you've shared here and that, you know, others have as well. In fact, just this morning I was having some coffee, listening to a podcast sitting underneath the tree, in my front yard. And I think a lot of times it just takes that pause, you know, just a little bit of time to slow down and really, look at a tree through that lens of gratitude. And I mean, you're right. It's the process of a tree growing. It really is all just kind of gratitude is encompassed in all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's selflessness. It's giving. It's beauty.
Mm. And it gives us an opportunity to appreciate. I mean, obviously you've spent the better part of your life appreciating trees, and mentioned, went back to when you were a child, when you like to climb trees, and, you know, it gives us that opportunity to have a sense of gratitude and appreciation for all the beauty that these trees do bring to us.
Yeah. The other thought I was having, Mike, is that the other gratitude piece that comes in is, you know, we can plant the tree, you know, we can water it, protect it, but ultimately the the growth happens and everything beautiful about that tree happens because of a higher power, right? Mm. The creative spirit that is infused in this planet and the whole universe.
Right.
And so the other thing that trees have taught me and the journey of life has taught me is that we don't really have control over the good stuff. You know, we can plant the seeds, we can do the work, but ultimately God is the creator, is really the giver of the fruit, is the giver of the beauty, is the giver of the everything that makes that tree what it is. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. All we can do is put it in the ground, but the real magic is beyond us. And that's what I'm most grateful for, because that's something that's totally beyond me. It's a mystery. It's you know, like even raising children, you know, we do our part or whatever, but they're growing. Everything that's happening in our body, and if we had to deal with any of that, we can't deal with any of that. It's just, that's the force.
Right.
That's what I'm grateful for, is I don't have to worry about any of that. You know what I mean?
That makes total sense. I mean, you know, it's all about controlling what you can control and kind of understanding what it is that you can control and what you can't. You know, you mentioned taking care of a tree, watering a tree, you know, providing the soil and whatnot, just to help to ensure that that tree can become a mature tree. But yeah, once that's done, I mean, it's kind of out of our hands. So yeah,
it's totally out of our hands.
Yeah.
And so the thing I think the thread of gratitude that's run through my life is a greater and greater appreciation for that mystery. And a reverence and a gratitude for that thing which does all, you know, our own breath, our own heartbeat. Like,
right.
That's something I don't control.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I'm grateful for that every day.
A lot of times it's those types of things that you don't really think about. I mean, it does take that intentional mindset and that step back to really kind of view all things in life through that lens. So,
yeah. Yeah,
I appreciate that about you. I like that lens that you're viewing that life through.
Yeah, thank you.
So one of the other things that I wanted to touch on is you went through university, you went into the corporate world, and can you just kind of walk me through, you know, I know you were in that mode for a number of years, but then you moved away from it. I'm just kind of curious if you can walk us through kind of some of those experiences and how it led you to what you're doing right now.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I was studying computer science. And I also had this passion for the planet and trees. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated, I was kind of at this fork in the road. My heart wanted to like just do everything I could to save the world. And my head was like, well, you just spent 4 years studying computer science and you need to make money and pay off some of your loans and blah, blah, blah.
The logic part.
And, you know, so then I was like, okay, yeah, let me just explore this computer science side and join like a software company, make some money, and then I'll see what happens. Right. Well, that basically, you know, sucked 15 years of my life, right? I mean, that they say salary is like an addiction, right? Once you get on it, it's hard to get off, right?
Right.
And it's true, because I started making money. I started taking on financial responsibilities, rent a car, all that thing, living on my own, moving up to Minneapolis. That was really great. Like, working for Vital Images was a gateway for me to leave the small town of Fairfield, Iowa, and come to a big city, expand my horizons.
Right.
You know, but once you find yourself in a corporate environment, it's very easy to get kind of sucked into that world, right? Mm-hmm. Climbing the ladder, making more money. You know, then it was like, okay, I got married. I found, you know, I met my wife, we got married, we bought a house. So now it's like even more, you know, financial responsibility. And so, yeah, I just got on that treadmill, you know, without you're really
doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Doing what we're supposed to be. Exactly.
Right.
And there are some joys there, but there were also many days where it was like, something's not right. Like my soul is not being fed. And so slowly over the course of 11 years, I would say that, you know, the first 4, 5, 6 years were quite invigorating, right? Sure. A lot of change and freshness. yeah, at some point I just, you know, it started to wear on me and I wasn't motivated to give my all in that kind mm-hmm. of environment. I started to coast and get comfortable, which was not good for my health and well-being, and found myself kind of stuck, you know, kind of stuck and scared. Because it was like, well, this is all I know. I have all
what do I do now?
Yeah, I have all these financial responsibilities. I can't just walk away from them. And just this really uncomfortable, despairing feeling of being trapped, I remember. And it was very depressing.
Not a good feeling.
Not a good feeling. No, I was kind of a low and dark point. And that was when my wife was kind of like, dude, you need to make a change, man. You do not look good. You don't look healthy and you don't look happy. And so do something, like make a change. And so around the time I was 33, so after about 11 years of working for the same company and such, doing a lot of the same things over again, I decided to, you know, switch. And that I switched jobs and make a change. And that set off a chain reaction, Mike, that has brought me to this point of this conversation. It was like, I can look back and like, there is one thing after another every year that helped me design a life that was much more suitable for my heart and soul.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting. You know, I just keep thinking back to our little conversation about the dots, and obviously these dots were really important in your journey. And you know, the fact that you can sit now and you can connect those, and they got you to, even though they were, it kind of sucked and it probably wasn't always, they weren't always things that brought you joy and that filled your soul. But I think a lot of times those are the things that are really necessary. And
yeah, for sure.
Know, we all have them. And, you know, in retrospect, it's really an opportunity to be grateful for that hardship or that uncertainty that came along with that point in your life. So
totally, they're wake up calls, you know.
Yeah,
we all like have that. A potential to live into our full destiny, if you will, or we have it's our destiny to live into our full potential. And when we're not living into that and stepping into our comfort zone, you know, the universe kind of slaps us so that we wake up. And that's what I've needed a few of those over the course of my life. And that was one of them.
So was there any trigger for you that, you know, got you from, you know, this kind of corporate world, this corporate mindset into doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, it was a gradual evolution. I mean, there were some key turning points. Like one of the turning points was that decision to make a change, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I left Vital Images to join Virtual Radiologic, another company in the same industry. And that was a great change because it was just, I became a learner and I came in with all the fresh questions. Within a year of joining this new company, I decided to go back to business school. That was another big decision, you know, a big investment of time and money and a big decision, but I was ready to like get back in the classroom and learn and get perspective and grow and stretch, you know? And in my first class at business school, I learn about the concept that became the basis for Key Hubs.
And Key Hubs is an adventure that you went down following business school.
Yep, exactly. So I got the idea for Key Hubs in my first year of business school, and within about a year went by, and I partnered with a classmate, and we started building the first prototype of Key Hubs. A year later, we had launched a commercial version of Key Hubs. It was just a hobby. It was a side project, but I was dreaming about having my own business and working for myself.
Right.
Within a year, year and a half, I quit my job to pursue it full time. Oh, and I should say, before I quit my job, so about 6 months before I quit my job to pursue Key Hubs full time, I had a deathbed experience. So it was the middle of the Great Recession. A bunch of people at work were getting laid off. I had no plan B. I could be laid off any second. And I had a stress-induced illness that put me on my bed for a month. I had to take unpaid leave. Couldn't get out of bed. Yeah. That was the first time I'd ever been that sick. And that was a major turning point. It was another one of those dark moments.
Yep.
And I was just like, what have I done with my life? I mean, I felt like I was dying. I'm like, this is what it must feel like when you're dying because you can't get out of bed. And I was only 37. But it was like, God, is this, do I want to keep settling in everything I do? Because even though I was in a new job and it was a good change, I was still kind of settling. You know, it really wasn't my calling. Right. It was still something I was supposed to do.
And I'm guessing you knew that, but so many times we get into those situations and it's like, how do I not settle? You know, how do I not settle?
Right. Exactly. I had my Key Hubs hobby going on at that time, but it was still very, you know, it wasn't generating any revenue really. And it was just like, so here I am lying in bed, feeling a great sense of remorse and regret that I didn't really follow my true calling in life. Maybe I didn't even know what my true calling was.
Right.
But as I reflected, and I thought about, well, if I could go back to the moment I graduated from college, and if I could decide to do things differently, what would I do? My heart and mind kept coming back to the trees and the kids. And I was like, you know, if I could go back, I would have just lived in my mom's basement kind of thing. And I would have just worked on that project, the tree project, because that's what really brought me joy. It was meaningful. It was purposeful. It felt good. I was doing something good for the planet. It was my own baby. Like, I would have just done that. I'm sure within 4 or 5 years, I could have grown it to a point where it could have supported me. Sure. You know, that was sort of this feeling I had. So I was like kicking myself while I'm really ill in bed. And then this inner thought was like, why don't you start now? It's better late than never. And this other feeling came in like, maybe you start now when you're 37. Just do it as a side project. You don't have to drop everything, quit your job, or pin your entire income on this project.
Right.
Just start small. See where it goes. And maybe in 10 or 20 years, when you quote unquote retire, this will keep you busy and you'll have something to do. That was it. And I called like a couple schools, including my son's school. He was entering kindergarten at that point. Mm-hmm. And I called up a couple of like co-ops and businesses to see if they'd be willing to fund the trees. Mm-hmm. And like that, Neighborhood Wood Forest was born in the midst of a deathbed experience.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it goes back to our conversation about these really challenging times. They often are the spark to joy and greatness and beauty.
Totally. It's the ashes from which the phoenix rises. Like,
I love it.
Yeah. Like a cliche. It's very true.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a turning point. So I have this deathbed experience. And then 6 months later, I quit my job to pursue Key Hubs full time. So this was another major, major turning point, because really for the first time since before kindergarten, I got to wake up on Monday and decide what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? Think about that. Like, as soon as you enter kindergarten, until you retire, you're basically told, you know, what to do and where to be. And so even though I didn't have any money coming in, right, we were relying on some savings to try and grow this business. I woke up on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, and it was like, wow, I answer to no one. I get to architect my own destiny. If I succeed, it's on me. And if I fail, it's on me.
Right.
How
did that feel?
Exactly. It was extremely liberating.
It's the word that I was going to use.
Yeah. It was extremely liberating, and it was scary. I was like, how am I going to bring in money? But it was just like, so I just felt unfettered, you know, unleashed. And because I could go, I've always been entrepreneurial. That was something I realized when I went to business school and learned about the difference between an entrepreneurial business and a more established business. And I'm like, oh, I like it when it's in the entrepreneurial stage. And, you know, I was part of this environmental club in college. It was very entrepreneurial experience. And that's where I thrive. That's where I feel like I'm in my element. So all of a sudden I was waking up without any meetings on my calendar, without anything, just this wide open space. Okay, go explore. And it was like, this is where I'm meant to be. And then I discovered Dan Pink's book about the drivers of motivation and, and how there's these three pillars of motivation: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. I'm like, oh, no wonder I'm so happy and engaged with life, because I have full autonomy and I'm getting better at this process of entrepreneurship. And it's giving me a greater sense of purpose than I've ever had in my working life. So to me, it was like I had arrived, and my job was to maintain these ingredients of autonomy, mastery, and purpose in my day-to-day life. That became my number one priority. And that really set me on just a priceless, unfathomable, unimaginable journey of adventure and magic and rugged challenges. You know, it's just been really
epic. I love it. Yeah. I love the fact that during your deathbed experience, the thing that triggered you, that you decided, what is it that will bring me joy? Again, it goes back to the trees.
Yes.
And you mentioned that even before the entrepreneurial part of your journey. But so it's, to me, it seems like for you, it's always been about the trees. And, you know, we all have things that bring us joy. And,
yeah,
you know, it's obvious to me that this is what creates that for you. So it's beautiful that you had that moment, even if it was painful and
yes,
and chaotic, and you know, you were uncertain as to how this was all going to play out, but you took that step. You know, without taking that step, who knows where you are right now.
Yeah.
And this magical journey that you just mentioned, it's probably on a different path. So I think it's really important to listen to your inner voice and take action on that. So yes,
exactly. That's what it's all about. That's the big lesson, is we have to listen to our call.
Right.
Our spirit is speaking to us every day, asking us to step out of our comfort zone. And it's frightening. And that's how we grow. And it's a treasure hunt. And we're never given the full picture of our destiny. We're only given one clue at a time. At least that's how I've experienced it.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
And you execute on the guidance, and then the next directive is given, and it becomes this long and winding serendipitous journey of wonder and magic that you can only connect the dots looking back.
Yeah.
So it's really wondrous. And that's what beautiful. I'm grateful for. Yeah.
That's awesome. So Neighborhood Forest.
Yes, Neighborhood Forest.
It's an amazing program. I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about how it works and how it started. You know, I know this year was a really cool year for you guys.
Yeah, it was.
It was a big year. Things kind of started to snowball in a really beautiful way. So maybe you can just talk us through kind of what it is, how it started, and you know, what happened over the course of the last year.
Yeah. Well, it's modeled after what we did in college and what David Kidd had started in Ohio. It's very simple. We give trees to kids for free every Earth Day. We want to give every child in America and eventually the world the opportunity to plant and watch a tree grow.
That's awesome. And
so we started with four schools in 2010 in Minneapolis. We gave away about 400 trees, and we've grown to over 400 schools, libraries, and youth groups. And we've given away over 50,000 trees to kids in 35 states.
Imagine that. Yeah. You know, imagine when you were back in college. I mean, obviously, well, I'm not going to say obviously, but even if you would have envisioned that this is something that you would move forward with, could you have imagined the impact, this kind of impact that you'd have the opportunity to make? 50,000 trees. It's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. It's, I think there's a lot more, you know, we're still barely scratched the surface. So there's a part of me that feels like, oh, you know, should we have been farther along by this point, you know, kind of thing, but everything happens in its own time. It's growing like a tree, you know, and 12-year-old trees are not that big. And we're a 12-year-old venture, and we're just starting to hit our stride. So it feels really good. But yeah, I mean, when I was in college, we gave away about 30,000 trees over the course of 3 years. But those were mostly kids in Southeast Iowa.
Okay.
what's really nice is now we have a national reach. We've figured out the infrastructure and the process to reach a child anywhere in America. Mm. And so it feels really good that we have this kind of reach. Yeah, that we're in 35 states, that we're approaching 100,000 trees. And if we continue to grow at this rate, we'll be, you know, we'll be in the millions of trees before too long, which will be really amazing. And we're on track. You know, if we can continue to grow in the manner that we have and have the kind of breakout year we did this year, we could reach our goal. Whereas a few years ago, that just felt like a pipe dream. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So what was the spur? What was the trigger to this kind of big growth that you had over the last year?
Yeah. Well, we always were targeting schools. That's where we thought our main channel was to reach children. Hmm. And so for the first 11 years of Neighborhood Forest, we were adding maybe 10 to 15 schools a year. They would find us on the internet or through word of mouth or some of our own reach outs. So it was a very steady linear growth. You know, we were giving away 4,000 to 5,000 trees per year, starting at around 2016, 2017.
Okay.
Okay. So it's still pretty small. We were mostly in the Midwest. But what happened this year in the spring, in February, late February of this year, something very unexpected and magical. And just like we were talking about the mystery, right? Only the mystery can grant the increase. We don't have control. So we're just tending to this program every year. Sometimes it felt like it wasn't going anywhere. There were a couple times where it felt like maybe we should just quit and shut it down. It's not really growing. Yeah. But lo and behold, this year, a library in Michigan heard about our program. Hmm. And for the first time in 12 years, a library reached out and said, "Hey, can we participate in your program? We're not a school, but we would like to give free trees to the kids who come to our library." I was like, "Wow, a library? Who would have imagined that a library would want free trees?" So we're like, "Sure, as long as you give the trees to kids, we'll sign you up." They're like, "Great." So they signed up late February. And they're like, "Hey, can we socialize your program with some other libraries in our region? You know, I think they'd be really interested." I'm like, "Yeah, spread the word. The more, the merrier." And the next day, like 5 libraries in Michigan signed up. I was like, wow, never had like such viral growth. You know, that felt viral in that moment.
Yeah, five libraries.
Yeah, 5 libraries. And so I was like, okay, cool. I guess these libraries really like this. And then in the days that follow, we had a library in Connecticut, a library in Wyoming, like libraries all across the country started signing up. Wow. And then the floodgates just opened. And within a few days, we signed up like 200 libraries. And
holy smokes.
I was asking these, we basically, what took us 11 years to do in terms of onboarding, we did in 3 days. And I was asking these libraries early on as it was starting to spread, like, "How did you hear about us? How did you hear about us?" And they're like, "Oh, someone in the library community," it was that first library that signed up, "had shared about our program in a Facebook group of librarians."
I love it.
Thousands of librarians. And so that's where it just, they just feasted on it, you know, and it would, and they were so good at marketing our program that it just spread among schools as well, you know, and Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts groups started signing up. And we had to put the cap on it because we had a 20x surge in growth. We had only budgeted for a third of that. And so within a month, you know, we had to raise 3x amount of money and we had to figure out how to deliver 3x amount of trees to kids all across the country. Oh. So it was a very thrilling, exhilarating, and overwhelming month or two there.
I would say, yeah, I could see the thrilling and exhilarating piece, but I could definitely see the overwhelming side.
Yeah, it was terrifying. Because we had to deliver on this promise. And like, what if we couldn't find the trees? What if they got delivered to the wrong place? What if, you know, there were a lot of what ifs, but
right.
You know, the first 11 years really prepared us for this.
No, that's cool.
And that's good. It was a stretch experience. We definitely had to stretch in a lot of ways and we did. And the universe came through for us as always in many magical ways. A lot of magic happened. And so this was a big turning point because we already have 150 schools and libraries on the waiting list for next year, Mike. So we ought to easily double we gave away 18,500 trees this year. And so we should be able to more than double. We're going to aim to give 50,000. Which is how many trees we've given in our first 12 years. So we're gonna do that all in 1 year and then see where things go from there. So yeah,
that is so cool. Yeah, I remember when I was, I don't know, third or fourth grade, I got a little seedling and planted it in our backyard. We actually moved, my family moved just to another home in the same town, but yeah, the tree came with us. So I was able to bring the tree to the new house. And I mean,
Is it still living?
What's that?
Is it still living?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. You got to send me a picture of you with your tree.
Oh, I'll do that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was just going to talk to you about the pictures. One of the things that I have really enjoyed is like on your Facebook page or on your website, all the pictures that you have of children.
Yeah.
And the smiles. I mean, it's like,
it's
priceless. Yeah. It's heartwarming. And, you know, it's beautiful that you're bringing that joy that you have. You're kind of providing that to other people, which it's really cool. So I guess one question, do you have any stories of, you know, kids that, or parents of the children that they've shared with you about the impact that, you know, getting that seedling has had on the child and kind of what their reactions are?
Yeah. Yeah. This was a big turning point in the neighborhood forest journey. So in early 2019, we were just coming up on our 10th giveaway. There were a lot of things happening, and I was actually considering shutting the program down. And my wife was actually the one who urged me and said, "No, come on, man, you've come this far. You're going to give up now?" Like, no. She's like, "If you're going to stop doing it, I'll take it over."
Way to go, Priya.
Yeah, she's amazing. So I was like, okay, fine. Let me just like do this one more year. It's our 10th anniversary. And it was in that moment, right around after having that conversation with that kick in the butt conversation from with Priya, that I was combing through my emails and I saw like some photos that parents had sent me 4 or 5 years prior of their child with their tree. And I had their email and we have all their contact information. So I'm like, you know what, let me just send a reply and ask like, how is this tree doing? And the first, person who I emailed was the mother of James. He's one of the kids on our website, on our Facebook page.
Okay.
He planted this little, like, I think it's a birch tree back in 2014 or 15. And he's all happy with his tree. And so I email his mom. I'm like, "Hey, how is James and his tree doing?" And like within a few hours, she replies and she has a current photo of James with his tree. And it's like bigger than him. And he's like looking up at it. And he's like, "Oh," and his mom is like, "Oh, James loves this tree. He checks on it every day."
Wow.
And I was like, I got like emotional. Like I started to weep and, you know, I couldn't believe that I was considering shutting this program down. It was like, wow, it's like working. Like these kids are growing up with these trees. So then I frantically combed through some other emails I had from parents who had sent me pictures of their kids with their trees 4 or 5 years ago. And so several of these current photos started coming in. I was just like crying, you know, seeing it. And I was going to Priya. I'm like, "Look at these photos. It's working. It's working."
And she's like, "I told you so."
Yeah. Like, "See, you idiot. I told you not to give up." And that was a turning point, Mike, where it was like, I don't care what happens with this program. These photos is what I'm living for. Yeah. I mean, these photos tell the story. These photos are going to be more and more magical as the years progress. The fact the trees have made it to 5 years old means that there's a very good chance they're going to make it to 30 or 40 or 50 years old. Mm-hmm. And these pictures are going to be epic, you know? So it became like a mission for me to get as many of these photos as possible and to track as many of these kids as possible, especially if we have the photos. So now when we send out the trees and we have all the parents' emails, we encourage them as like a lot to be like, "Please, if you want to thank us, please send a picture of your child with a tree. You're going to thank us for that 5, 10, 15 years. And they're going to thank you because it's just a beautiful, it's the magic. I mean, that's the thing. You see these kids and these trees growing together and you're just like, that is awe-inspiring. That is the magic of the creator. That's why we should be planting more trees. Mm. And so I've heard a lot of stories from the parents now of like, "Oh yeah, this is a great thing. Our kids loved it. You know, they got their hands dirty. They check on their tree. They've named their tree." And we hear funny stories like this year, one child loved his tree, planted it. And then he came back the next day and he's like, "How come it's not big?" So coming back to that whole thing, it's like, it's teaching. The tree teaches us.
Yeah.
Good things don't happen overnight. They take time. They take decades. They take patience. I've had to learn that with Neighborhood Forest, like just the venture of Neighborhood Forest.
Yeah.
Many times I'm like, how come this thing isn't growing? How come people don't want our free trees? What the heck? You know?
It's like anything. I mean, it's a great lesson for that little boy that, I mean, it takes attention. You have to attend to, you know, the tree in order to help it grow. And that's the way life works. So it's a great life lesson.
It's a masterful metaphor, isn't it?
Mm, yeah. All right. I got to ask, do you have a favorite tree?
Yeah, I get that. I do. I mean, I like all trees, certainly. And there's many trees that I see pictures of that I'm like, wow, I'd love to hug that tree, or I'd love to be in the presence of that tree, you know, like wicked trees in Madagascar or New Zealand, you know, these places I've never been. But I've always had reverence for like the sequoias just because of they're just epic, you know, and I've been to National Forest. I've been to Redwoods. So just being in the presence of those giants is amazing. And they're like thousands of years old. Okay. Thousands.
What's crazy to me when you mentioned sequoias, I can't remember where I heard this, but I mean, they're hundreds and hundreds of feet tall, right?
Oh yeah.
But the interesting thing about sequoias that I learned is their root system is not that deep. It's pretty shallow. It's like, I think 6 to 12 feet, but it supports this tree that's, you know, hundreds of feet tall. And as I understand, the way that works is because the roots from different neighboring trees interconnect. They become intertwined.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like, wow, okay, well, that's amazing. But imagine if we all connected as humans, you know, if we were all intertwined and we were interconnected, how strong we could be as a society. What a
beautiful metaphor. Like, there's so many. Yeah. The whole, you know, there's that whole thing about the, how the trees, there's research that shows, you know, that the trees talk to each other through the mushroom fibers, roots underneath the surface of the soil. There's all kinds of things we're learning about trees that is truly magical. So I love the sequoias, but I really love oak trees, like being in the Midwest my whole life, just the wickedness and the curviness of oak trees and they're just a force of nature. You know,
what I love when you mention the oak tree, the thing that came to my mind right away is like that lone oak tree sitting out in the farm field. Just to me, that's just one of the most beautiful sights.
Yeah, exactly. They branch out in every direction and they're so nonlinear, you know, the curviness, and they're just the bark is so rugged, so tough. But there's this toughness, but there's this beautiful grace about them.
Right.
And they're so beautiful when they're full, and seeing them naked is just like, I could look at them all day. They're just so amazing. All the branching. We have one right near our house over by this creek, Minnehaha Creek. And I'm in awe of it. And we have a couple in our neighbor's front yard, and they're just magnificent. So, but there's lots of beautiful trees. Every tree has its own beauty. You know, this fall colors, or it's the way it's a bark, or
right.
But those long lasting trees, you know, those trees that get over 100 years old, there's something just magnificent. Like, this thing's going to be here long after I'm gone.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Where can people learn more about what you're doing? I know you mentioned the Facebook site, a website as well. I mean, I think this is such a, you're on such a role right now that getting the word out, I think, is really important. And, you know, again, what you're doing is so impactful on so many different levels that, yeah, I just would love our listeners to know where they can learn more.
Well, neighborhoodforest.org is our website. We've got all the information there. If there's a library, school, or youth group leader that is hearing this, they can sign up their school or their library or their youth group to get free trees from us every year.
Cool.
There's a simple sign up form there. There's also a place to donate too. You know, we fund our trees through donations from individuals, organizations, foundations, and so forth. And
they can do that through the site?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Currently, we accept donations through PayPal or Venmo. Looking to expand that, but that those are the methods right now. And and we also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/neighborhoodforest. We're also on LinkedIn as well, but we'd love to hear from folks and partner with folks. And
absolutely. No, I've kind of kept abreast of what you're doing with Neighborhood Forest, and it's awesome. I just love what you're doing. And I love the fact that you're following a passion of yours, you know, something that brings you joy and fills your soul.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, I feel very lucky.
One last question. Well, second to last question.
Yeah.
So again, your story is, it's really powerful. It's really compelling. I mean, it's a great story of kind of that winding path that led you to you finding something that truly brings you joy. I'm curious, what would you like others to learn from your story?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, trust in the goodness of your own inner voice. You know, listen, act on it. It's really the ultimate guide. And just like a tree is beautiful because it's non-linear in nature, its branches, I think our lives become beautiful when we follow this long and winding road of the inner spirit's guidance.
I love it. That's beautiful. All right. One of the things that we like to do is kind of end on a fun note. We have this thing called the Fast Five. So basically it's five kind of random questions that'll come at you pretty quick. And you just give us the first thing that comes to the top of your mind. Are you cool with that?
Oh yeah, for sure.
All right. They're pretty easy questions. They're kind of softball questions.
Okay.
All right. So what are you most looking forward to in the next 10 years?
Seeing my kids grow up, seeing these trees grow up, living more and more into my heart and to my heart's calling.
That's fantastic. You'll get there. I have no doubt. All right. Second question. What's the last random thing that made you smile?
Well, my son likes to share these TikTok videos with me. You know, he's like, Dad, you got to see this. And he shared one that is just hilarious. It's if you're happy and you know it, and there's some swear words in there too, and two cats slapping hands with each other. You got to see it. I'll send it to you. I think it's only on.
Unfortunately, I'm a TikTok fan, which takes far too much time in my life. But people are so creative. I love it.
Yeah, maybe you've seen it already, but that's a random thing that makes me smile.
I love it. That's good. All right. Would you rather fly to your destination or take the road trip?
The road trip. Always.
No question. It sounded like.
Oh, yeah. That's easy.
All right. What's the last book you read?
The last book I read. Well, I'm reading a book. I'm not good at finishing books I start. But there's this one book that I have been reading. It's about Krishna. The Man and His Philosophy, written by Osho, and I'm loving it. Yeah.
That's awesome. Very cool. All right. The last question. If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
It would be to melt people's heart.
Nice.
With joy and love.
Doesn't surprise me. You kind of, I think you do have that superpower, just as a heads up. That's fantastic.
I'm working on it.
I love it. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to chat. This was an awesome conversation. It was great just to, you know, like we said in the beginning, just to reconnect. It's been far too long since we've gotten together to have lunch or even just to have the conversation. So I am really grateful for you and the time that you took to have this conversation. I know our listeners are going to learn a ton from it. So keep doing what you're doing. Like I said, the impact that you're making on our world it can't be overstated. So I love what you're doing. I'm glad you found it, and I'm glad you listened to that inner voice. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Mike. This has been a lovely conversation. I'm so glad our dots crossed.
Absolutely.
Way long ago, and we got to do fun road trips together. and that our connection is still alive and vibrant and finding new possibility in these kinds of collaborations. So I'm grateful to you, grateful for you to invite me so that we can spread this message of joy and trees and following the clues of the treasure hunt. So I'm grateful to you, and let's keep the conversation going.
Sounds good. Hey, you have a great rest of your day, okay?
Thank you, Mike. You too.
All right. Take care.
All right. Yeah, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Gratitude Spark Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and were able to pull out some tips and tricks that might help you dig deeper into your own practices of gratitude. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with others. Tell your friends about it. Post about us on your favorite social media platforms. And most importantly, click on the follow and subscribe buttons, and also leave a rating and review of the podcast. To catch all the latest from the Gratitude Spark, head on over to thegratitudespark.com to check out our other content. You can also follow us on Instagram at thegratitudespark and on Twitter at gratitude_spark. Also, please join our thriving Facebook community called The Gratitude Spark for awesome conversations about gratitude and the role it can play in our lives. Thanks again, everybody. I'll see you next time.